A15, we're getting a beautiful picture coming through.
Roger. Go ahead with your questions.
Roger, we'll admire the beautiful picture for a few minutes here. Deke just passed out from the shock, incidentally. Okay, fellas, I have a preliminary statement to make here. The questions you will be asked in this news conference have been submitted by newsmen here at the Manned Spacecraft Center who have been covering the flight. Some of the questions they raised have been answered in your communications with Mission Control, but the public at large has not necessarily heard them. The questions are being read to you exactly as submitted by the newsmen and in an order of priority specified by them. Question number one. This last week, we have shared scores of exciting moments with you. Which single moment would you most like to live again? And is there any moment which you would never like to repeat? Question number two. Near Spur Crater, you found what may be Genesis Rock, the oldest yet collected on the moon. Tell us more about it.
Well, I think the one you're referring to was what we felt was almost entirely plagioclase, or perhaps an anorthosite. And it was a small fragment sitting on top of a dark brown, larger fragment, almost like on a pedestal. And Jim and I were both quite impressed with the fact that it was there apparently waiting for us. And we had hoped to find more of it. And I'm sure had we more time at that site, we would have been able to find more, but I think this one rock, if it is in fact the beginning of the moon, will tell us an awful lot, and we'll leave it up to the experts to analyze it when we get back to determine its origin.
Question number three. Apollo 15 is already being described as one of the great events in the history of science. Aside from the crystalline rock, what other findings at Hadley Apennine seem most important to you?
I guess immediately I think of the orientation or organization that was revealed in the side of Mount Hadley. There's 14,000 feet vertical relief, a vast mountain face exposed to us, and there was layering in there. It was most impressive for the total 14,000 feet, and we commented on the number of beds that we could see. That really impressed me that you could have that much organization in on a large mountain on the moon.
Question number four. This was the toughest landing area we have attempted to reach on the moon. Describe what it was like flying into it. Question number five for Al Warden. In lunar orbit, you too carried out geologic observations. For example, you reported cinder cones. Could you discuss this and other observations from 60 miles up?
Yes, the comment on the cinder cones was one of color, but we noticed, particularly on some of the lighted part of the backside, that many of the craters that we flew over were filled with what appeared to be lava. There seemed to be a great number of lava flows in the Mare areas, particularly Mare Imbrium. Mare Imbrium seems to be just a countless numbers of lava flows, which were all apparently very thin and very fluid. And you can just count numbers of full fronts covering Mare Imbrium. So we got, quite a distinct impression of a great deal of volcanism around the moon. And in some particular isolated areas, such as
metro area, and such as areas like probably the Aristarchus Plateau, there's a great deal of volcanism and some cinder cones and certainly a lot of lava flows.
Question number six. Do you feel that the workload during your three lunar surface excursions was too demanding? You appeared at times to be reaching the limit of your endurance. Any recommendations for Apollo 16?
I think any time you set out on a task, such as the one we had, you're bound to, at certain times, get a little tired, which I think we probably did. However, I think we came back, and I don't think we ever reached anywhere near the limit of our physical endurance. I think Apollo 16 probably has everything in hand. It's just a matter of conditioning yourself. Jim and I have discussed it since we got back on board the Endeavor, and concluded that our training is what really prepared us, and the many hours we spent during geology field trips and in simulations at the Cape in our suits, we feel was the factor which really contributed to being able to proceed with those duration EVAs. I see no problem in the future with conducting three successive seven-hour EVAs. Neither one of us were particularly physically tired. I think the fatigue is really in the mental regime, in which you're concentrating very intensely for 7 hours, and you're pressing to do your best all the way through, and keep your eyes open to make the appropriate observations and gather the samples. And I think it's really more of a mental factor than a physical factor.
Question number seven. You described the lunar rover as a bucking bronco on the moon. Would you elaborate and assess the rover's performance and tell us what changes you recommend for the 1972 model? Question number eight for Dave Scott. The drill seemed to drive you up the crater walls. What was the problem, and was it worth the time?
I guess I'd anticipated that question. I think the problem was a striking discovery. When we went to Henley Rill, we expected to find the regolith, or the soil, about 5 meters thick. And with that in mind, like 25 feet, I expected to have no trouble putting the heat flow probes in or drilling the core stem, because of the expected soft soil. After about 1 meter, I ran into hard rock, and my first thought was it was an isolated rock somewhere within the soil. But that was not the case. Apparently, what we have is a very thin regolith, or a thin soil layer, above a solid rock. And with this in mind, I think we brought back a core stem, or a deep drill core of the moon, of basic bedrock, or foundation rock, on the Hadley Plain. I think that's a very significant find. I think it will be very meaningful to the scientists when they analyze it. The perplexing problem was doing the actual drilling and extracting the core stem. If you put a drill in the solid rock, it's very difficult to get it out. And there at the end, it took both Jim and I, with our shoulders pushing as hard as we could up, to extract the drill stem. But in the final analysis, as I look back on it, I think it is indeed worthwhile. At the time it occurred, we were both interested in moving out to the northern complex and further geology, which Jim and I are both quite interested in. And the mechanical task of doing the drill at that time seemed somewhat less important than seeking new finds in a new geological area. But in retrospect, I think we have, in fact, brought back one of the most significant samples of the whole trip.
Question number nine for Dave Scott. In view of your comment to geologist Leon Silver about the need for trained scientists on the moon, do you think that scientist astronaut Jack Schmidt should be included in the crew of Apollo 17, the last of the Apollos?
Well, since I really have very little say-so as to which people get selected for which crews, I might sort of bypass it with
one comment that I think the more qualified a man is on the moon, the more results you're going to get. And I think that's one of the reasons that we put as much time as we did into the geological aspects in hopes of learning enough to bring back some significant data. I think that in any situation such as this, in any scientific endeavor, that you want the most qualified people as possible. You must also remember that this is a highly complex operational mission. It requires a great deal of training and skill in order to fly these machines. I think, in particular, Jack Schmidt is a very highly qualified individual in both aspects. And I believe it's up to the management, when they select the crews, to select the best people for the flight.
Question number 10 for Al Warden. What runs through the mind of a man orbiting the moon alone?
Well, I guess the thing foremost in my mind during those 3 days was how I was going to keep up with the timeline and the flight plan, and how I was going to keep track of all the experiments we had going and where they were and whether they were operating or not. And I guess that was a very, very fast 3 days for me. When I wasn't looking at the SUPE experiments, I was looking out a window and taking pictures. And it was a pretty cramped 3 days. As a matter of fact, I guess I didn't really have much time to give any thoughts to being alone out there.
Question number 11, again for Al. You said after your spacewalk you wish you had stayed out longer. What was it like out there between the Earth and the Moon? And why did you come in so soon?
Well, let me answer the last one first. I guess I didn't come in soon. I came in when the job was done. And as a matter of fact, I made an extra trip back out to take a look at the mapping camera. Now, as far as what I felt like when we went out there, we talked a little bit about it after the EVA and decided it was sort of like walking on stage at your high school dinner dance or something. We opened the hatch and it was pitch black, and as soon as we got out, the sun was beating down on everything, and it looked like a very large floodlight on a stage. And then putting the TV camera out on the door just added a little bit more to that sort of unreal feeling that it was time to get out on the stage and do something. I think as far as the UVA went, we did it just almost exactly as we practiced it. It took almost exactly the same amount of time and did it the same way. And of course, we had practiced that with the mapping camera in the extended position, and so that really posed no difficulty to us.
Question number 12 for Dave and Jim. You didn't have time to get to North Complex, craters which may have been formed volcanically, and where you thought some surprises might be found. Was this a significant loss?
Well, I'll start out and throw an answer there. I think if you look back at the original requirements for the landing at the Hadley Apennines, they were primarily to inspect the front and the rill. It was only after a considerable amount of study had been done and some rearrangement in the flight plan, the timing on the surface, that we found we had enough time to plan to go to the Northern Complex. So the Northern Complex was, in fact, an addition to the original requirement. It was a bonus. And I think because Jim and I have spent so much time with volcanics in our terrestrial geology work, that we were quite interested in getting to the Northern Complex to see if, in fact, it was a volcanic area. But I don't believe we lost anything from the lunar surface by not going there. Only we would have had a bonus had we been able to reach that point. And with that in mind, I hope that someday somebody gets a chance to go back and take a look at the Northern Complex. Jim, you want to answer?
No, I agree with everything you said. It was just a little personal disappointment that we couldn't get up there because we thought we'd have another beautiful view of the plains there and the limb, a view almost as beautiful as it was from the side of Hadley Delta.
Question number 13 for each of you. Would you please, in your own words, tell us what you gave the American taxpayers besides a few hours of good television?
I think the magnitude of the scientific data we've returned will speak for the taxpayers' money. The small amount of time they had for television, I think, is rather insignificant relative to the amount of return we've gathered in the sim bay and in the lunar samples we have aboard right now. I think these data will not only enhance the progress of science, but it'll reach the common man in the street directly by the byproducts of what we learn. I think man must extend himself. The new frontiers must be open in order for us to propagate mankind, and I think this is one way in which we do it. I feel that the taxpayers got, as a matter of fact, I hope they got more than their money's worth out of the flight, and if you could see the size of the film magazines that Al brought in yesterday from those cameras, why, you'd see that we have indeed at least a great deal of data on film alone.
Well, I really guess that there's not much more to add to what Dave said. He expressed my sentiments exactly, in that the knowledge that hopefully we've added to our store of information about the moon and about ourselves will be increased in an extent which is greater than the capital that was spent on the flight itself. And I would certainly think that this whole series adds significantly to man's knowledge about himself primarily and about himself in those areas where it will help future generations, maybe.
I can only add that we're bringing back just a lot of data and a lot of material, and it's going to take many years for people to really appreciate how much was gained from this flight.
Question number 14. It seemed this flight had as many problems as some of the old Gemini missions. Which of these gave you the most concern? And for Dave, did you ever feel you were back on Gemini 8?
That was probably as impressive a sight as I've seen.
The landing itself, once we pitched over, was somewhat of a surprise in that the cratering was much more subtle than we had expected. There was a great lack of any large fragments or boulders on the surface. It was apparently quite smooth, and those rather deep craters, which we had anticipated using as landmarks, because of their subtlety, did not appear quite as readily as we had hoped. I think we did recognize our relative position east-west of the rill because of the size of the rill itself. I think we were a little off in the north-south, but close enough to handle the traverses of the rover. And I think that having a vehicle such as that enables us to go into more complicated, difficult landing areas, because it's not necessary to land on an exact point. We can take advantage of our mobility and land anywhere within a certain prescribed area, which was initially our goal on this flight.
Well, there were several times there when we were riding along where we'd hit a sizable bump, and you could see the wheels come off the ground and float through the air. And but Dave should comment more as far as the driving. And it was really like a bunking Bronco, that's true, because I was strapped in. As you know, Dave had to strap me in because I had some trouble with my seat belt. But I really did feel like I was on a bunking Bronco.
I think I might add that it's a very stable machine, but because of the 1/6 gravity, it tends to float. In the simulations we ran at Houston, we saw the same amplitude or the same degree of bouncing, but a different damping. In other words, the vehicle would come off the ground, or one wheel normally would come off the ground. It would take it somewhat longer to return to the ground than in 1G. And I think it's just a matter of becoming accustomed to the driving. It's a very stable vehicle. The suspension system is excellent. We had to make some rather sharp avoidance turns periodically. And in these turns, we could tell the vehicle was quite stable, no tendency to turn over whatsoever. I think the only recommendation we'd really have would be to come up with a new idea on a seatbelt type arrangement, and we've discussed that also. I think we have some suggestions we can make when we get back to ensure that you can have both crewmen securely in their seats in a short period of time. Other than that, I think the vehicle is about as optimum as you can build. Well, I guess we weren't aware we had that many problems. I thought this was a rather trouble-free flight myself. We went a long way. We spent a long time doing the job, and I think relative to the number of systems we have in all the spacecraft, that we had very few problems. And I feel like the spacecraft and the life support systems on the moon and everything worked exceedingly well. I guess, really, I couldn't ask for much more. How about you?
Well, you know, really, we had very few problems. It seemed like a very tame simulation, as far as I was concerned.
Certainly, there were irritating things that happened, like some circuit breakers in the spacecraft here that gave us some trouble, and some lights that aren't working exactly right. But certainly, none of the important aspects of the flight, or none of the essential pieces of equipment, has malfunctioned, and I think it's been just great.
Gentlemen, we'd like to continue the press conference in a few minutes, but in the meantime, we'd be anxious to get one of you started on the lunar eclipse photos. We have three more questions. Question,
Okay,
Question number 15, for Dave and Jim. How many times did each of you fall down on the lunar surface? Did any of these falls hurt you or give you any problems?
Well, I fell down twice, and it was never any real problem. Actually, could have got up very well by myself without any help.
Yeah, I guess I fell down twice, too, and as Jim said, it was never any really problem. It's a matter of if you start to go, and of course it's early.
terrain there, I guess you can see in the television, was quite rough and irregular, with occasionally rocks around. And we were pressing to try and get things done. And it was just a matter of, if you just start losing your balance, to go ahead and go easy and accept somewhat of a light fall, because in the 1/6 gravity, there was never any impact. When we hit, take it easy and get up slow. And I don't think either one of us ever came anywhere near the point of being hurt in that sense of the matter. Just a matter of slowing you up for a minute, enabling you to regain your balance and go ahead. And I have a question. You want to have the photos of lunar eclipse with a television now, or do you want us to get on with the camera photos? Because if that's the case, we have to turn the lights out of here.
Rog, we're going to skip down to the last question, Dave, which says, your cabin must be jammed with moon rocks, core samples, suits, and assorted hardware. Can you show us what it's like in there? And as you show us around, you can get set up for the moon photos and dim the lights when you like.
Okay, I guess to show you around, we have to unstow everything. We're pretty well stowed for reentry right now. We have all the samples stowed. The suits are all stowed. And I guess, in order to show you around, we have to do some unstowing, because beneath the couches right now, it's jammed full. And I guess we'd like to do that for you, but it's somewhat impractical, in that all you can see would be some edges of some white bags. And that's why we have the room in the cabin here. Everything's pretty well squared away. But when we get back, I'm sure you'll have an opportunity to see the many things we have, and there's really a lot of it.
Oh, okay, Dave, that's fine. And I guess one last request is, when you get over to that window, before you take the photos, could you give us a quick picture of the moon with the TV camera?